When you are ill and you go to the drugstore, you go over the counter to get something to relieve whatever the difficulty is physically you are facing, only to discover that after you have purchased your over-the-counter medicine, you are not getting better. It becomes clear at that point that something deeper is wrong. If you're not able to resolve it by simply going up and down the aisle and picking the appropriate medication, that generally leads us to pick up the telephone and call the doctor so that we can get a professional examination about what's going on that we have personally been unable to resolve through over-the-counter solutions. The doctor then does a battery of tests because he or she is looking deeper to discover the root of the problem. And having discovered the root of the problem, the prescription that they give is usually quite a bit different and a lot stronger than the over-the-counter efforts we tried to resolve our own problems. We need a professional analysis and a professional solution to problems that we ourselves can't fix. I would like to suggest to you that for many people, there are exceptions, but for many people, the reason why they are not getting better and not experiencing victory or deliverance is because there has been an undiagnosed reality operating in their life. And that undiagnosed reality is the reality of demonic oppression. Now, grant you, this is not a popular topic, especially to the educated Western mind. We have educated ourselves out of spiritual analysis. We have become sophisticated in the West so that the subject of demons are really cast out to third world countries, people who do not have the scientific advancement or the educational astuteness to be able to resolve problems as we can with all of our sophisticated technology and understanding. And it is because of our failure to understand what demons are and how demons work that they're free to operate in our lives and in our circumstances, keeping us hostage while we still go for over-the-counter solutions. So if you will allow me this day to leave the counter and go visit the doctor, and you can determine whether you or someone you know is dealing with something much deeper than mere casual analysis by people who do not understand the spiritual realm at work. Now, throughout Jesus' life and ministry, he had to deal with demons. When you read the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he is constantly confronting physical realities with spiritual causation, demonic influence, oppression, or possession, where demons had infiltrated a situation, bringing destruction to a life or to a community because they were undetected or unaddressed. One of the more famous encounters of Jesus with demons is in Mark chapter 5. So that in case you are dealing with a demon in your life and did not know it, you can become both aware and acquainted and seek to address that undiagnosed cause of everything else that may be wrong. Jesus has crossed the sea in verse 1 of chapter 5 of Mark. He gets into the boat and immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He had been dwelling among the tombs. No one was able to bind him any more, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him. and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, day and night, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. You and I would say he's crazy. He is destroying himself, gashing himself with stones. He is unclothed. He's walking around naked. He's isolated from family and friends and living among the dead because he lived in the tombs, the graveyards. I mean, he's screaming with the loudest scream that you would ever want to hear. We would say that man's elevator doesn't go all the way to the top. We would say he's one fry short of a happy meal. We would say this man is off. And the reality is something is graphically wrong with him. But the root of his problem, it says, was an unclean spirit. That behind the craziness that we were looking at, that people observed, was something that you could not see. It was a spirit that was unclean. The root of this man's problem was demonic engagement, demonic involvement that had created within him a mental illness. Now, let me say, first of all, I am not saying all mental illness is tied to demon possession. What I am saying is some mental illness is. Many mental illnesses are. And the further you see yourself living your life out of control, where your mind is off, causing you to do things, scream things, be violent with things, out of your control, that I do not want you to skip the possibility that this goes beyond how you were raised and what you saw growing up and the experiences that you had, but there is the possibility that this is about demonic involvement. Now, it's not that folk didn't try to help this guy. We're told they tried to shackle him, they tried to chain him, they tried to control him, they tried to manage him. And every time they tried to do something to control the anger, the outburst, the craziness, he shook it off. In other words, society couldn't help him. People couldn't help him. Programs couldn't help him. No matter what they tried to do, he shook it off, dismissed it, rejected it, broke free from it. Because the demons were so much in control that other people couldn't bring him under control. When you see yourself or others living an out of control life. This is not an out of control moment. This says day after day, night after night. In other words, crazy was his lifestyle. It was the way he operated. Then you must at least investigate whether you are dealing with demonic involvement. Now, the demon is described with his nickname, an unclean spirit. He's going to be called a demon later, but right now he's just called an unclean spirit. And with that one phrase, we are introduced to the root of this man's problem. You see, demons go where dirt exists. Dirt, unrighteousness, sinfulness being practiced in a life is an invitation for demons to join you. because they are unclean spirits. So they look for things that are unclean in order to be at home. They are drawn by that which is against God, perceiving it to be an invitation. You do not have to give roaches a formal invitation into your house. You don't have to say roach motel. They will assume if you've left enough trash long enough that they have been invited. You do not have to give mosquitoes a formal invitation into your yard. Just leave stagnant water long enough, and they will assume by the fact it has gone unaddressed that they are welcome in that vicinity. You do not have to tell rats and mice that your home is their home. They will assume that if you allow things to go day after day, week after week, and month after month, that they have been welcomed there. The point is, you do not have to give demons a formal invitation. You don't have to say, Satan, send your messengers to be at home in me. They will assume by the dirt in our lives that they have been welcomed into the house of our being, because they are by nature unclean spirits. So they look for uncleanness to make themselves at home. And when they come and infuse themselves through either influence, oppression, or domination and possession, they amplify what is already unclean. So what is already unclean becomes dirtier by the demonic engagement, activation, influence, and expansion of the dirt. You see, mosquitoes bring other problems when they show up around the dirt. Mice and rats and roaches bring other problems when they come around the dirt. And when demons see that there is dirt in our lives, unaddressed, that goes on and on and on and feel like they have been invited, they come and they make worse the dirt already there. So the problem that many people are facing is not only the dirt that brought them, but the expansion of the dirt by the demons who've been welcomed to the dirt by the existence of the dirt that has gone ongoingly unaddressed. So you can go from a bad habit to crazy. Not because you're doing worse, but the demons have made it worse. And that means over the counter won't work, because it's a spiritual issue, because we're dealing with demonic involvement. Now, our problem today is, if you are sophisticated, if you are edumacated, if you are sadity, then you will dismiss this as something that belongs in a country way out there where they worship stones and rocks and trees. But in the New Testament, Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he makes the point, he says in verses 20 to 22, that even Christians in the church can eat at the table of demons. He writes to Christians in the church at Corinth, and he says, I do not want you to dine with demons. And he's talking to Christians. So it is unfortunate today that even though we're in church, we regularly have meals with the devil. and we don't even know he's been invited to dinner. Paul goes on to say in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 to 5, that the demonic world feeds on lies. See, the scripture says Satan is the father of lies. He is a liar from the beginning, and he's the father of lies, and any father has chillings. The demons, the ones who followed Satan in his rebellion against God, or the unclean spirits, gravitate toward lies. That's why it is in their interest to keep you from the truth, because they feed on lies. He calls them in 1 Timothy 4, the doctrine of demons. That is, the teachings of demons, which are the lies, they feed on that. James chapter 3, verses 13 to 16. James says that earthly wisdom is demonic. When you take man's view over God's view, what you've just done is invited demons into the situation, into the discussion, and into the infiltration and infestation. So this demon thing is real. The problem is it's unseen. It's invisible because it's spiritual. And this man's life has been taken over by the demonic. And he is now out of control. He's gotten worse and worse and worse. And I would like to submit to you, things in our lives that are dirt, that go unaddressed, ongoingly unrepented of, invites demons. The demons come, make themselves at home, and begin to reorganize the furniture in our lives so that we are carrying out their bidding, not even knowing that it's them. And the way we know it is, it's getting worse and worse and worse, even while we're taking over-the-counter solutions. But because it's unseen and unfelt in terms of the spiritual nature of it, it goes unrecognized, unaddressed, while we come to church. Because there's something else going on. This man, however, sees Jesus in verse 6. From a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. So this man who's demon-possessed sees Jesus, and he comes down and he falls down on his knees in a posture of worship and submission. He bows down before Jesus in worship and submission, which creates a problem. Notice verse 7. And shouting with a loud voice, he said, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me." Okay, this now is getting very confusing. The man runs and drops down in a posture of worship. But then the man says, "What do we have to do with you?" Wait a minute. I don't know if you follow that. The man, that's a singular, that's a he, dropped down in worship. But then the man says, "What do we have to do with you, O Son of God?" So what the man does is he drags his demons to Jesus. Because the demons are inside of him. They're controlling him. But he brings his demons to Jesus. And so the question now is a group question. What do we have to do with you, O Son of God? Do not torment me. We didn't go on back to singular. So we didn't go from singular to plural back to singular again. Because the man is battling with himself. When demons take over, but Jesus is brought into the equation, there is going to be an internal conflict between what you want Jesus to do and what the demons want to do. He says, "Do not torment me." If any of you have had to, or know anyone who's had to, get the monkey off their back. This is typically done with drug addicts when they're trying to get rid of the drug addiction, and they're put in a room and somebody's either sitting there with them or they lock them in the room to detox them. And they go through a period of torment. They're sweating and they're curled up. You've seen it in movies. They're screaming out. Because they're trying to get the toxins out of them. But before things get better, things get worse. They go through a tormenting phase to get the monkey off their back. And it is in this tormenting phase that this man drags his demons to Jesus, and he's now wrestling. Because the demons want to know, why you bring us here? We don't want this. Don't you torment us. What is the torment? Here it is. The spiritual is meeting the spiritual. They're now faced with the Son of God, but the demons are faced with this. So now the problem and the solution are facing each other. See, as long as he's just hanging out in the tombs, as long as he's just dealing with social structures trying to make him feel better, the demons are at home and he's just so crazy. That's all he is. He's just being his crazy self. But now that he's been confronted, the spiritual with the spiritual, there is now a conflict inside of him that is erupting between the Jesus he's bowed to and the demons that do not want their lifestyle interrupted. So he's in a personal conflict. For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." Verse 8, "Come out of him." Well, the demons don't want to come out. They don't want to come out. So they're holding on for dear life. "You're tormenting me because you're trying to pull them out. You got me sweating. You got me going through conniptions because you're trying to pull them out and they trying to stay in. And I'm caught between bowing before you and this inner pull that will not let me go." You ever been there? Standing before the Lord, wanting to please the Lord, desiring to please the Lord, but that thing in you keeps pulling you back. Well, that thing in you is bigger than a desire, quite possibly. It could be the demons that do not want to leave. Jesus asked him in verse 9, "What is your name? What is your name? Tell me your name." He's asking the man, him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion, for we are many." Whoa. I ask you, what's your name? You answer, "My name is Legion, for we are many." A legion was a group of up to 6,000 Roman soldiers. Up to 6,000 Roman soldiers made up a legion. You're going to discover in a moment, this guy had 2,000 demons. The more demons you have, the crazier you are. The more addicted you become. The more you can't control yourself, your anger, your speech, your tongue, your passions, your whatever it is. The more demons that are in control, the more out of control you become. We are legion, for we are many. So whatever the uncleanness was in this guy's life, it drew a legion. Since he uses a Roman term, since the demons use a Roman term, a legion, up to 6,000, you need to know something about a Roman legion. Roman legions operated in unison. You've seen a parade or a group of soldiers, left, 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 left. They march in unison. Why? Because they operate together. That's why the Bible makes such a big thing about unity. And that's why the devil keeps us fighting. Because if he can keep us disunified while he is unified, he can run the show. He can control the agenda in the home, in the church, in the country. He can control the agenda. The Bible says there are demons that watch over whole nations in the book of Daniel. That nations have demons assigned to it to keep the races divided, the classes divided, the culture divided, the politics divided. But if you don't believe in demons, if you don't believe that there's this spiritual covering out there that's creating the division while they march in unison so that they can control the show, then you're going to have meetings and conferences. And can we all get along without ever addressing the spiritual reality that is at the root of the problem? The legions operate in unison. Our name is Legion. For we are many, he says. And we don't want to be tormented by you. You need to know something. If you ever kill a roach, not that I know anything about that, but if you ever kill a roach, you need to understand it has cousins, nieces, nephews, uncles. What you killed was the scout. You killed the lookout roach. You killed the one who was sent out there before he called his peeps to come join him. So you can get all excited because you stepped on him and cracked him. Because if you don't hear a crack, he ain't finished yet. You got to crack it. That's what somebody told me. I don't know about that, but that's what somebody told me. Or you spray a bottle of Raid and the roach goes down. You have not solved the problem because behind the wall, behind the, you know, the cupboards, behind the, there's a whole family. There's a whole family. They're just waiting for enough darkness. See, the darker it gets, the more courage they have. See, when it's bright light, they want to hide. But if they can see some dark. So that's why you need an orking guy. You need somebody who can get to the dark places that are unseen. Jesus is saying, come out of him. And he began to employ him. The man began to employ Jesus earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. The demons employed him, saying, send us into the swine so that we may eat them. Jesus gave them permission, and coming out of the unclean spirits, entered the swine. The herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. Oh, there's so much here. Number one, the demons asked for permission. That's because even the devil can't do anything without God allowing it. They asked for permission. And what they ask for is, if you're going to make us leave this man, give us another place to go. Because as you see in the movies, demons need host. They need something alive in order for them to express themselves. because they are spirit. They're invisible, although they are persons. They have intellect, emotion, and will. So they are persons, but they are invisible persons. And so they need a visible thing in order to express themselves on earth. So Luke chapter 11, verses 24 to 26 says that when they're in waterless places, that is places without life, where there's no water, there's no life. When they're in waterless places, no life, they're looking for a place. They've got to express themselves. And so when they see dirt in our lives unaddressed, then they come upon us so that they can express their uncleanness in our uncleanness, making our uncleanness worse than the uncleanness it was before they arrived. And so they express themselves in us. Jesus says, come out. They say, well, will you allow us to go to the pigs? Why? Why did Jesus say you can go to the pigs? Simple. They're unclean animals. So he lets them leave an unclean man for an unclean animal. Because they can only flow where there's uncleanness that goes unaddressed. When they enter the swine, they go hog wild and pig slop crazy. It says they run downhill and drown themselves. Because the goal of demons, one, is to always take you downhill. It is to devolve your life, defeat your life, ravel up and tie up your life, destroy your life. Demons have one goal, that is, you go down. And their ultimate goal is suicide. It says that the pigs went down the hill and drowned themselves. The difference between the pig and the man is that the pig doesn't have a soul and the man does. So there was some resistance in the man that does not exist in the pig. So when they went to the unclean pig committed suicide. So let me say this. There is no person in the Bible who committed suicide in the will of God. All suicides in the Bible were outside of the will of God. So it is demonic for the influences of demons to push people to want to kill themselves. But if nobody tells them it's demonic, and all they are looking at is the circumstances, then the demon can drive them down, 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 until they don't want to live anymore. But if you don't believe in demons, and you don't take the spiritual seriously, then they got you. Jesus comes along and he addresses it because he addresses the spiritual cause, not merely the physical symptoms. A few years ago, I had an infestation of bees in my bathroom. The master bathroom had an infestation of bees. Dozens of them would be in the bathroom. Going to kill them, 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 spray them, spray them, spray them, toss them away, flush them down, get rid of them. A few days later, dozens of bees. Go through the process again. A few days later, dozens of bees. What I am doing, which is the best I can, is not working. So I call an exterminator over. He goes up into the attic and he finds a beehive in the attic where they were multiplying and replicating. He destroys the beehive. Having destroyed the beehive, I paid him. I thanked him, and I felt better. But a week later, I have now a new infestation of bees. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I did the best I could. Then I paid a professional to do the best he could for the money I paid him. And I'm still stuck with the same problem, an infestation of bees. A guy tells me about another guy who he says, I think he may solve your problem. I call this guy off. He comes over to my house. I said, I've been killing bees and they keep coming. I had the exterminator who I paid and he got rid of the beehive that was in the attic and they still coming. He said, your problem is neither you or the person you paid asked the right question. Said, y'all were doing the best you can, but the question was wrong. The question was not, are they in the bathroom? Nor was the question, is there a hive in the attic? The question is, how are they getting into the house? It's a different question. Because given enough time, if you don't solve how they're getting in, they'll just build another hive. That hive will produce more bees, and you will keep having to fix up your bathroom. So let's go outside and walk around your house. So I go outside with him and walk around the house. Go out, walk around the house. We walk around the house. We walk around the house again. We walk around the house again. Walk around the house again. We walk around the house again. I think we're doing Marbury Bush because we just walk around the house. You know, we're walking around the house, walking around the house. And then he says, ah. I'm thinking, oh, what? Oh. He says, ah. Oh. He says, whoop, there it is. What? I'm looking at him. There what is? He said, there's your problem. I don't see a problem. I'm looking. He says, no, look real close. And I'm looking real close, and I do not see a problem. I don't see a problem. He says, you're not looking close enough. It's a pipe coming outside. Look up, go, look up straight to the pipe entering the house. He says, you see that little space around the pipe that's open? He says, it's a little tiny space. Little tiny space. He told me, they don't need a lot of space. All they need is just a little bit of space, because if you give them a little bit of space, they know how to wiggle in that little bit of space and call their posse to come right behind them and set up a new hive so that it can now come down into your bath. They don't need a little space, he says, because that space has gone unaddressed. They feel free to enter your attic, which leads to them entering your bathroom. They feel free. So what we've got to do is we've got to close the gap. Because you've created what Paul calls an opportunity for the devil. We got to close that little space. Even though it doesn't look like a big thing, even though it doesn't look like a deep thing, even though it doesn't look like anything worthy of your attention, they don't need much. And if you will just close that space, I think we will solve your problem. He went and got a little mesh. Put the mesh in the little teeny space around the pipe. And the bee problem was solved because I closed up the little gap that allowed them to enter the bigger house. I asked him, how much do I owe you? He said to me, you don't have to pay me. I got you covered. That sounded like Jesus to me. The enemy looks for spaces. And we've all given him some at some time or another. He doesn't need a lot of space. He just needs it to be open and dirty. And if it is, he will seek to enter that space, bring his family behind him in order to bring demonic downturn into our lives. The herdsmen, verse 14, ran away and reported it to the city and in the country. And the people came to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had had legion, and became frightened. Do you see what happened? It looks like a U-turn to me. Looks like a reversal to me. He now has clothes on. He was naked. He was not in the tomb. He's now out of the tomb. He was cutting himself. He's now in his right mind. All because Jesus overruled the demonic, the spiritual. And when he overruled the spiritual, sanity came to the insane. Now, this man is way off because he's had 2,000 demons. How many demons do you have? Or do I have? Maybe you only have two. Maybe you have 200 or maybe 2,000. But the more the demon, the more the oppression, influence, and possession. And as long as the opening stays open, the demons flood in. But if you're sophisticated, you've been to college, you have a degree, you got a good paying job, this will roll off of your back and it will go unaddressed. And that's why you see smart people going down. What's one other thing? Let's look at the herdsmen. Verse 17. And they began to implore him to leave the region. They told Jesus, get out of here. We don't want you here. Why? Get him out of here because he's costing us money. See, they were pigs, herdsmen. So when their pigs drowned, their money got funny. They said no more pork chop, no more pig feet, no more chitlins, no more ham hock. This man is costing us money. And a lot of us are keep paying money for stuff that money can't solve. But because folk don't want to lose the money, they keep you coming back. See, if I wasn't doing what I do, I'd probably be a non-Christian, secular psychologist, because then I could charge people $250 an hour to tell them why they need to come back next week. You just keep that thing going and keep that thing going, keep that thing going and keep that thing going and keep that thing going so you can keep it coming in, keep it coming in. And Jesus, if you are going to, if you're helping people is going to cut down on our revenue, don't help nobody. Because what's more important to us is the money, not the transformation of lives. And whenever money is made the test and criteria for the transformation of lives, so that Jesus has to be put to the sideline for profit, you know it's not legitimate. Nothing wrong with profit, but when Jesus has to be put to the sideline for it, get rid of Jesus. Let's keep the business coming, even if we've got to keep the folk hooked. It closes with this statement. The man wanted to get in the boat with Jesus in verse 17, in verse 18, who was demon possessed, imploring him, Jesus, that he might accompany him. And Jesus said to him, You go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. That tells me right there, the man needed mercy because of how unclean he was. And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed. I want to make two observations. When they told Jesus, get out of here, he left. Because Jesus doesn't want to be where he's not wanted. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man opens the door, I will come in and sup with him. But if you do not open the door for him, he will not stay where he's not welcome. He has to be welcomed in order for him to stay. But the second thing is he told a man, no, don't come with me. I want you to go to Decapolis. That's made of two words. Polis meaning city, Decap meaning 10. Go to the 10 city region. You go home first, then you go to the 10 cities in your community, and I want you to talk about what I did for you. So here's the deal. I challenge you to approach the downward hill of your life spiritually first. Do that first. Let's get to the right question first, the whole first, and see if there's a demonic thing by throwing yourself at the feet of Jesus in worship and submission. And yes, it may be tough at first, because if it's demonically influenced, they don't want to come out. They want to hold on to you as long as they can. But you keep throwing yourself at the face of Jesus. And like Jacob say, I will wrestle with you till my change come. But I am going to throw my face and submission to you, Jesus. That's what I am going to do. And then when he delivers you from your demonic infestation, you better not keep that to yourself. You better tell somebody. He says, go to Decapolis and you tell them in the 10 city region. You go to DeSoto, Duncanville, Lancaster, Fort Worth, Keller, Grapevine. You go to all the communities around and you let it be known from family and friends and everybody you know in the surrounding neighborhoods. You go to Frisco and Plano and you let it be known, Jesus Christ has delivered me and I'm not keeping this to myself. Anybody who can deliver me from what I could not deliver myself from, I'm going to tell it, I'm going to tell it, and then I'm going to tell it again, because I am not ashamed of anybody who can deliver me at no charge.